Whatever you do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it.
This is the Hidden White Podcast, episode 394. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. My name's Lee Mundelty, the Hidden White Guy, here to inspire you to live your life with greater passion and purpose. To do that, I really believe we need to connect within, discover our why, and use that to formulate our life compass, to navigate our way towards a life with greater freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. And to do that, guys, I interview amazing people. Today's interview is with Dr. Tasha Urich. Now, Dr. Tasha Urich is an organizational psychologist. She's a researcher and a New York Times bestseller. She's got a couple of great books. One is called Bankable Leadership, all about leadership, which we start the conversation off with, actually. I ask her what that book's about, and she gives us a few tips about how to improve leadership, which was really insightful. So certainly that's the first part of our discussion. But then we jump into the bulk of her work and her newest book called Insight. And Insight is about, you know, how becoming more self-aware can really help us succeed more in both work and life. So that's the premise for this conversation today. So we talk into, you know, what self-awareness is, does the self actually exist, what are the elements of the self, and she talks about the internal and external self, which is really cool. And then she gives us some really great some really great techniques and practices to help us, you know, become more self-aware, and in doing so, really, you know, achieve the benefits of why self-importance is so great. So, guys, a very beneficial conversation. I hope you get some value from it. Would love to hear your thoughts. You can jump onto thehiddenwhy.com and leave your comments in the comments fields there, obviously. But you can also reach out to me using the social media platforms. Facebook and Twitter predominantly is where I'm hanging out. But you can also use my email address as well, thehiddenwhyguy@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to connect. Also, reach out to Tasha. She's got a great quiz that she's put up there for us. So she mentions that in the show. And that'll be available, or the link to that quiz will be available in the show notes as well, so you can check that out. And yeah, just reach out to her. Thank you for coming on the show, guys. There's some really good value in this, and there's some great benefits that can come from self-awareness. And as she alluded, or as suggested, that, you know, sometimes we think we're quite self-aware, but perhaps we really are not. And certainly it's given me a lot to think about today as well. So, guys, enjoy it, get some value from it, and we will talk more soon. G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hidden Why Podcast. My name's Lee Mundelty, the Hidden Why Guy, and today I'm pumped, I'm excited. I'm joined by Tasha Urich. How are you, Tasha?
I'm great. Great to be here.
Thank you for coming on the show. Looking forward to our conversation today. Now, Tasha, tell us, where are you today? You're over in Denver, Colorado. Is that right?
I am. I live in Denver, although I'm not here very often, so I always relish the days, especially in the early summer here. It's just beautiful.
Ah, lovely. And so you get around and travel a bit, do you?
I do. That's one of the great things about my job, is I get to travel the world and meet interesting people.
Okay. So you're the founder of the Urich Group, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And what's your role there? What's that all about?
So I've been an organizational psychologist for about the last 15 years, and that I'm sure your audience is familiar with what that field is. But basically, we apply the principles of psychological science to help people and businesses succeed.
Yep.
And so I spent, you know, the first part of my career in academia. I moved to the Fortune 500 world, and now I have my own consulting practice where I work with clients, you know, from executive coaching to leadership development programs, and it's such fun, fulfilling work. I really love what I do.
Okay, what is it exactly about the work that you love?
For me, I think it's seeing other people's potential and then helping them grow into it. Whether it's an executive who is, to our point today, not particularly self-aware, who can make some improvements, or even just a young, hungry leader who I can help kind of come into their own. It's very, very cool to see the light bulbs go on and to see people increasing their efficacy and being more confident. It's really incredible to see that firsthand.
That's great reward, and seeing people's transformations, and that's really cool. So, tell us What is it about traveling the world that, or traveling around? I don't know if that would be a good thing or not necessarily. Going from jet to jet, traveling from place to place, is that sometimes a little bit tiring?
You know, it's funny. So I've been 1K on United, which means I fly 100,000 years or miles a year or more. Ooh. For almost 10 years. Wow. And everybody who's a road warrior keeps telling me how they'll get sick of it. And there's something about it, that even the process of getting somewhere, that's like a fun game. You know, it's not always fun when your flight is canceled, but even just that process and that ritual is always really interesting to me. Yeah. And then there's nothing that I love more than traveling to, especially just weird corners of the earth. You know, I'm thinking right now about a leadership retreat I did with a group of women leaders in Uganda a couple of years ago. Wow. And we're sitting there literally in a thatched hut with a dirt floor. It's a bunch of women who have overcome just incredible obstacles to build businesses for them and their families. And I hear the exact same problems from them as leaders as I do, you know, sitting with a Fortune 10 CEO. So there's something really wonderful about seeing those commonalities and then also just relishing and experiencing those differences.
Yeah, well, okay. And I suppose the excitement of something new all the time is really refreshing as well in life.
Yes, I have a very short attention span, so that works out quite well.
That would work well with me too, I think. Cool. Okay, well, let's get into the conversation. Now, you've got a couple of bestsellers. One you've just recently launched, but your first book was called Bankable Leadership. Is that right?
That's right.
So tell us just a little bit about that book, first of all. What is it all about and what can people hope to expect?
So I wrote Bankable Leadership because I felt like there were, you know, there's like 100,000 or more books that have been written about leadership.
Yeah.
But what I felt was missing was a book that could be a guide for a leader, not to hear a theory and not to see kind of the most recent trendy topic, but to say, how do I approach my job in a way that helps me be successful kind of on a day-to-day basis? And in my work, you know, at that point I had been doing what I do for about 10 years, and I saw this fundamental tension that all leaders faced, again, around the world, doesn't matter what job or what industry, where they're balancing keeping their people happy with driving results for their business. And I found that most leaders, right, I mean, it's the hardest thing in the book, and I found that most leaders are kind of good or at least inclined to focus on one of them, but it's often at the expense of the other. And so the idea of being a bankable leader is perfectly balancing both of those outcomes and figuring out, how can I have a happy team and blow my business plan out of the water? And, you know, obviously that's easier said than done. And so I set out to write a book to look at the research on this empirically, to look at real leaders who have made incredible transformations and just say, you know, how do we break this down for people essentially? So that was what I set out to do with that book.
Well, okay, so that's cool, and I guess that's your role. In your role is to really guide people through that transition. So putting it in a book is certainly beneficial for those people that perhaps can't reach you. And I assume there's a lot of techniques and practical takeaways from that book as well. Is there any a couple of really important or critical techniques that you could share, perhaps about doing that, but finding that balance in their leadership?
Oh gosh, it's so funny. I've been talking about my new book for so long that I probably couldn't name my favorite tool, but I could name one or two that I'm thinking about.
Just a couple of the ones that come to mind that you think are really the ones that you've seen have the most profound impact on leaders that you've been working with.
Yeah, well, this is just one that came up today. I talk about this idea of treating your employees like adults in the book. And as much as we sort of think we're doing that as leaders and as corporations, we over-regulate, we over-policy. You know, I talk about a leader who was the HR director of Remax, right, the global real estate firm. And she came in and she found that they had hundreds of pages in their policy manual. One of their policies was how to order flowers for a coworker. And it was literally a one-page guide on here are the rules for ordering flowers for your coworkers. And the research on this is pretty clear that if you treat your employees like children, they will actually start to act like children. And so I talk about this principle in Bankable Leadership where I call it act as if. Act as if your employees are mature adults who can navigate those decisions on their own, but you're going to provide clear expectations. You're going to provide accountability if that doesn't happen. But part of that idea is just to lead in a way that will hit that 98 or 99% of employees who are, you know, trying to do their best and deal with that 1% some way other than a policy. And that's been strangely like a very revolutionary idea for a lot of leaders that I've talked to that have read the book.
I think a lot of leaders, you know, some of the leaders that I've come across in my past career is, you know, they certainly want that. They expect the staff to act like adults. But then when they find them incapable of doing something or just not performing correctly, they sort of get frustrated, and then it shows in how they lead, the individuals. And it seems quite rude and, yeah, almost like you're dealing with a child. But I think that's a natural way that we go about dealing with things sometimes.
It is, and I think sometimes it's a product of frustration. My employees aren't doing what I want them to do, but quite often, in my experience coaching executives and developing leaders, the first person you should point the finger at is yourself, and not in a, you know, self-loathing way, but to say, am I really creating clear expectations? And are they clear to my employees as well as to me? Even if I think they're clear, are they clear? Mm. You know, do they know they're not performing? And a lot of times if you go through that checklist, the problem is more on your shoulders, which a lot of times is a good thing, I think, because it means you have control over it and you can try some things before you do, you know, assume that this person can't perform or doesn't want to perform.
Right. Yeah, it took me a while to realize that in my leadership role. You know, I started to look externally for all the problems, but when I started to really go, okay, well, hang on, what am I doing wrong? How could I do something better to really help the situation? That's when I started to really see the performance of the area that I managed really increase. And really good advice too. To just look within, and I think that's important for leadership of your own life, is really to look within and say, well, hang on, if something's really not working for me, if I'm really not happy, or if something's quite, you know, not rubbing me the right way in life, what am I doing wrong? What can I do better? Rather than looking externally for everything.
That's it. And a lot of times it's never as simple as, oh, it's 100% on me or it's 100% my environment. But I'm always amazed when we ask ourselves those questions, how much more control over our destiny we have than it first appears, which is really kind of motivating at the end of the day.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Motivation, self-motivation is all about, you know, having that sense of control. And if you don't, I guess you're not going to put in the efforts and give yourself the time to really, you know, progress.
Oh, so well said.
Very cool stuff. So what, a couple of overall great point there is to treat leaders like, to treat individuals like adults. Now, what's one other key takeaway that we can gain from becoming an effective leader?
Oh, gosh.
Just to really, well, you know, get you back to your old book. I'll get to your new one soon.
Here's one. This is one of the easiest things in the book that almost no leader does, which is to be vulnerable. And there's been a lot of, you know, talk on this. Brené Brown does excellent work. Mm. But it's so funny when I'm in the trenches with leaders and, you know, I go talk to their team. I do a you know, I call it a qualitative 360, where I interview everyone that works for them, you know, their boss, their board members. And I have to bring them news a lot of times that your team doesn't trust you and they don't think that you trust them. And in the process of exploring sort of where that behavior comes from, it's so often a result of the leader, who quite often in corporate America or around the world is a very type A perfectionist, right? They're achievement oriented. They've been rewarded for producing results and being unimpeachable in what they do. And so this idea that all of a sudden I have to start admitting my weaknesses or saying what I don't know, or, you know, even God forbid, owning my mistakes with my team, can feel like the scariest thing to do in the world and like it's wrong. And right. So one of the things I tell leaders is, you know, we say that we treasure vulnerability, and we all have watched Brené's TED Talk, and right, but the question is, are you really doing that? Are you showing up on a daily basis in a humble way with your team? Mm. Because as much as you don't do that, you're creating a wall. You're walling yourself off. You're not letting them understand your motives, your humanity, and helping them build compassion for you in the same way that you hopefully want to have it with them. So it's as simple as admitting, you know, I don't know that, or gosh, I messed that up. What I tell my leaders is everybody probably already knows you made a mistake. And if you just perpetuate the fact that, you know, you didn't, then it just makes you look even less trustworthy. So I think that's another really easy thing to do that is sometimes harder.
Yeah, well, look, it's, you know, building that trust in those relationships is critical to having people, you know, work effectively for you. And I certainly learned that as well, going back to my days in a leadership role. And first of all, I'd just like to mention to the audience, TED Talk by Brené Brown on vulnerability, Power of Vulnerability, I think it's called. Amazing TED Talk, so check that out if you haven't already. But look, yeah, vulnerability, I mean, it's a hard one to navigate out. And I understand that it might be easy to just, you know, show up and be yourself and be honest, you know, if you don't know something, etc. Just let that show. But as a leader, we don't want that to show because we feel that it might affect our integrity or status as a leader. And certainly I've seen in some of the companies that I've worked for, leaders who aren't vulnerable, they show up in very false ways, but it seems to get them results. It seems to get them promoted. And I think that creates an unhealthy sort of organization. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, it is. And this is actually a great segue to the topic of my new book, which is self-awareness.
Cool.
And the idea that if you are not in touch with the reality about yourself and the way other people see you, typically you can be successful to a point, or you can even be successful in spite of that lack of self-awareness until the day that you're not. And, you know, a great example from recent headlines is Oscar Munoz, the CEO of United. And I'm a very loyal United flyer, and I actually really loved a lot of the things that he was doing. But up until that moment where he clearly was not able to understand the context that he was operating under and the impact of those statements initially that he was making about, you know, sort of making it very clear that he wasn't prioritizing the humanity of his passengers. That's a great example of somebody who's successful until the moment they're not. Mm-hmm. And it's never as simple as saying, well, this person is self-aware or this person is not self-aware. Usually it's somewhere in between. But I think that's a great example of why we should all be prioritizing this. Just because the environment we're in, you know, makes it seem like we don't need it, doesn't mean that it's not going to, you know, either sort of get in our way on a bad note or on a good note, going to help us have a unique edge and unique way to be successful.
Okay. Yeah, cool point. And so let's get into that then, self-awareness. And I've got a few questions around this. I know your new book is Insight, and it's subtitled Why We're Not As Self-Aware As We Think We Are and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed in work and in life. I hope I got that correct.
Very succinct, right? Yeah.
So I suppose for me, first of all, it's the question around the self and, you know, what is the self and does the self really exist? Because I sort of think and write on this topic a lot, but what is your thoughts on that?
Wow, just, you know, diving into the simplest question first,
yeah,
right?
That's where I want to start.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is, and this is true around the world, there is a concept of self. There are so many things where it is contextual. We are part of our environment. We are our relationships with others. And that's why I advocate a pretty broad definition of self-awareness. And, you know, so I've been, the background on this is I've been studying this topic empirically for the last 3 years. And when we first set out on our research program, we thought it would be pretty simple and straightforward to define what is self-awareness. And my research team and I were pretty shocked when it took us a year and having to review over 800 studies just to figure out what was this thing. And I think it goes to your point of just the complexity of the self and what does that really mean. So we came up with basically two components that make up our self-knowledge or our self-awareness. Right. One I call internal self-awareness, which is that inward clarity of who you are, what you want, you know, what you want to achieve and experience in your life, your personality, your patterns. But then the other side of the coin is something I call external self-awareness, which is how do other people see me? And what's fascinating is those two things are completely independent. So someone might have, you know, they might see themselves very clearly and, you know, spend thousands of dollars a year going to therapy or meditation retreats. And you might talk to all their friends who say, oh gosh, that person is oblivious. They have no idea what we really think of them. And it's the same is true for the other, right? You can understand how people see you and be so focused on that, that you lose sight of what you really want. And so that's why I advocate for that broad definition, is it's the self and sort of seeing yourself clearly, but also understanding the context and the environment and how part of you is the relationships you have with the people around you.
Mm. So, yeah, and I guess I've heard a lot of stories about it, you know, about moving beyond the self and, you know, sort of almost vaporizing self, which I don't know how you would do, to be honest, but
even if you wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, like if you could move beyond that, that's the key to sort of a deeper sense of happiness in life. And that the self doesn't really exist. Now, I sort of, you know, I get that the self perhaps doesn't exist, and maybe it's just a creation of the environmental factors and history, experience, and all that sort of stuff. But it certainly gives us something, some form of identity, and I think that's really important as how we how well we live this life and how we direct our way through this life. And I relate to what you've just said about internal and external self-awareness. With the ego as sort of that external self that's independent from the inner self, which I think is more important when it comes to really, you know, finding that deeper sense of happiness. Does that sort of resonate with your research?
Oh, definitely. It definitely does. And the other thing too is, you know, I want to be very clear about what I am and I'm not saying about understanding how we're seen.
Yeah, sure.
What I'm not saying is that we should become slaves to other people's opinion, or we should prioritize the way they see us over the way we see us. On the contrary, what's fascinating, I've spent years studying, especially people who have made radical transformations, who went from, you know, delusional to quite self-aware and quite clear about how they see themselves. And at the end of the day, they're actually balancing those two types of knowledge. They're saying, I'm not going to sacrifice who I am and what I want, but I do understand that I operate in this world where I am my relationships, I am the context largely. And so it's sort of this delicate, complex balance that isn't as easy to categorize, I think, as many people would want to.
Okay. So let's go on the basis that it is there, and I guess do some of us have a greater, higher, like inner self-awareness or internal self-awareness than external, and vice versa?
Well, oddly, so our research has shown that those two types of self-knowledge are completely independent.
Yeah.
So what that means is you could be high on both, low on both, high on one, low on the other. Uh-huh. But again, I see a silver lining in that, because for a lot of people, you know, yes, we all have room to improve in both, but maybe the beginning of your journey to self-awareness, and we can talk about why that matters too, but maybe the beginning is to say, which of these two types of self-knowledge am I most lacking in? You know, am I clear on what I want and who I am, and or am I clear on how other people see me? Am I asking? Am I chewing on that? Am I finding people that will tell me the truth?
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of there's beauty to that, even though it's kind of confounding that those two types of self-knowledge aren't related.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and this is a great way to reflect on it myself, because I feel that I'm a person that's quite self-aware, or at least more self-aware than I was previously. And just because of the recent years of work that I've done internally, but perhaps I'm quite unaware of my external self or how others see me as well. So that's it's a really good observation to make, and certainly I'm looking forward to the techniques you might be able to give us to help us explore that further. So why does, you know, self-awareness really assist us? What are the benefits of, you know, firstly doing the work to become more self-aware?
I call it the meta skill of the 21st century. Reason it's the meta skill is, number one, it has positive ripples into every area of our life. So people who are self-aware are more successful at work. They get more promotions. They're more confident. They're better communicators. And in their work relationships at home, they have stronger relationships, deeper, more fulfilling relationships. They are better parents. They raise more mature children. They're less likely to lie and cheat and steal. I mean, the benefits, we could sit here for the whole rest of the podcast and list them. So that's one reason that it's, you know, why wouldn't we be honing the skill? But the second piece, the reason that it's the meta skill is it sort of sets the upper limit for our success in most areas of our life and most skills that we're trying to hone. Mm. So the things that make us successful in the 21st century, like communication, influence, emotional intelligence, we can only do those as well as clearly as we see ourselves. And so I always tell people that if there's one part in your life that's sort of lacking, one of the greatest places you can start is that foundation of self-awareness. And awareness doesn't automatically entitle us to, you know, changing the world and realizing all of our greatest dreams. But for the people that have done that, that's the place that they've started.
Okay. I talk about the hidden why here on the show. Often, mm-hmm. and it's really about, you know, becoming self-aware so you can really use that to direct your life with more purpose towards how you want to live it. Is that one? I guess that must be one of the benefits or the benefits that come from being more self-aware. I mean, if it really affects in a positive way many aspects of our lives, so I guess that would really help us. And I feel that for those that aren't self-aware, often get taken away on tangents and on paths in life that perhaps aren't the paths that really are beneficial to them and their well-being. Is that certainly the overall sort of benefit that we could expect from you know, becoming self-aware as well?
Yeah, the immediate benefits that we get are smarter choices, stronger relationships, and a more fulfilling life. You know, this is maybe a little more detail than we need to get into, but I found that there are 7 types of self-knowledge that separate self-aware people from everyone else. And a couple of those types of self-knowledge are things like, what are we passionate about? You know, being super clear on that so you can find your hidden why and you can pursue it. What are our aspirations? What do we want to experience and achieve? And if you think about sort of going along in our lives without being clear on those things, or at least trying to develop our knowledge in those areas, we can't make decisions in service of our happiness and success and the happiness of the people around us.
Okay. Very interesting. So do you find, I mean, in your work that a lot of people, obviously you must, that a lot of people are just not very self-aware, and do you find that when you do the work with them, they feel that they're in a place that perhaps really isn't where they want to be in life?
So here's a statistic that I was pretty stunned by. I was pretty stunned by how extreme it was. So our research has shown that 95% of people think that they're self-aware, and the real figure is closer to 10 to 15%. And what I always joke about, pretty accurately though, I think, is on a good day, this means that 80% of us are lying to ourselves about whether we're lying to ourselves. Right? And it's fairly stunning. And, you know, if I were one of your listeners, one thing I might be thinking right now is, well, yes, all the people around me, they're very unaware, but thankfully that doesn't apply to me. And it's so interesting because the way we're built as humans, the way our culture and our sort of context operates around us, it almost favors self-delusion, or at least seeing ourselves with rose-colored glasses. And so what I don't advocate is for people to say, you know, instead of being delusional, I'm going to be self-loathing. I'm going to just hate myself. It's not at all what we go for. Mm. What we should instead be doing, though, is just starting to question some of those assumptions, like asking yourself, if I'm not as self-aware as I think I am, how would I find out, or how would I know? And what I see is it's almost a sport for people to go around pointing at others and saying, well, you know, that person is just not self-aware, whether it's a boss or an in-law or a politician. But we almost never turn that focus onto ourselves. And sort of going back to your excellent point earlier, that's what we can control. And why not take that energy and funnel it into something that really can give us huge dividends for the work that we do?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting statistic there. I'm certainly on self-awareness. Okay, well, let's jump into maybe some of the techniques or practices about how we can become more self-aware. I guess it comes in both of those elements of looking internally and externally, and asking questions around both of those independent factors. But I'll leave it open to you to you know, best guide us as to how we can start off or begin the journey of greater self-awareness.
So the first step in a very long, lifelong journey that, by the way, we're never done with, is to make a choice that I call being braver but wiser. And I mentioned earlier that I studied these people who had made these just remarkable transformations in their level of self-awareness. And something that I was shocked by, frankly, was I couldn't find any patterns by gender, by job type, by country of origin, or kind of where they grew up, even their age. Age isn't related to our self-awareness. But what these people did have in common were two things. Number one was a belief in the supreme importance that self-awareness plays in their life and their happiness. And number two was a daily commitment, not to overthinking things or, you know, getting lost in themselves, but a daily commitment to sort of questioning their assumptions and getting more data and batting that around and being okay with some of the ambiguity and courage that comes along with it. That's a no-brainer, but I feel like so many people say, well, I'm busy. I know I've got to deal with that, but I'll wait a couple years until I'm up for that next promotion. I think I'm good. I'm pretty self-aware. I don't need to work on it. But the other thing that we found was the most self-aware people, you know, I called them unicorns, these people that made these dramatic transformations, they actually did the most work out of anyone in terms of building their self-awareness. So just giving ourselves that permission to say, I am going to work on this, and this is important, and I am going to try to find the energy. Maybe it's not every day, but maybe it's more days than not. So that's probably the most important and critical step.
Okay. So just the second thing, knowing the importance, knowing the importance of why self-awareness is beneficial, and then, you know, taking the courage to really challenge yourself and be open to the challenge of putting in the effort and asking the questions that might be actually difficult, I'm guessing, as well.
Oh, gosh. And not only are they difficult, but so often my research has shown that we're actually asking ourselves the wrong questions.
Oh, really?
So many well-intentioned people who are students of self-awareness are often going down the wrong path, or a path that isn't leading to the same level of insight that they might think they're getting or that they might hope they're getting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's sort of the practice of it. And what does that look like on a daily basis? So maybe that's the next thing we talk about. This is more for the internal self-awareness of just seeing yourself clearly and knowing, you know, again, to the purpose of your podcast, what's my hidden why, even just as a critical starting point. So my research has shown, as well as many others, that quite often when we introspect or self-reflect, that it does not result automatically in self-awareness or insight. And that was the most sort of concerning findings for me. I thought, well, surely the people who spend the most time self-reflecting are going to be the most self-aware. And what I found was not only are they not the most self-aware, but they also tend to be more anxious, more depressed. You know, they have more stress in their lives. And it's not that introspection is wrong. It's just that so many of us are doing it in ways that aren't serving us.
Again, not asking the right questions.
That's it. That's exactly it. So let me give an example. So let's say that I am, you know, frustrated with my relationship with a close friend. And, you know, we just seem to be fighting all the time and we can't communicate. And, you know, a lot of people might, for example, go to therapy and say, I'm going to talk to a therapist about this. And they might go sit in the therapist's chair and the therapist guides them to a process where ultimately this person decides that, you know, that the root of my relationship problems with my friend is the fact that I felt abandoned as a young child, and I'm repeating those patterns from my past, right? And they're like patting themselves on the back for this insight. There are two problems with that. Number one, there's a lot of research that has shown that no matter how hard we try, we can't access that unconscious part of ourselves that we think we, you know, if we just spend enough time navel gazing, we can get. Number two, it actually doesn't help us move forward in a productive way that helps us build on our insight. So it's sort of those types of questions where we're just excavating into ourselves, like we're trying to get the key to the padlocked basement that is our unconscious. It slows us down and it gets us stuck and it misdirects our energy and attention.
We're pretty powerful. Like we can create those scenarios, you know, based on experience as well, even though, you know, it's just using past evidence and experience and sort of creating a theory as to why something might exist, even though it's just, you know, something the mind's just conjured up.
That's it. And what's so crazy, well, crazy in that it's to me at least, is that a lot of times we might feel like we know the answer, you know, this is why I'm doing this, but we're often wrong. Right. And there's so much research that shows, you know, there was this very famous study in psychology, you probably heard of it, where the researchers went to two bridges in a national park in Canada. And one of the bridges was really scary and hundreds of feet off the ground, really rickety. The other was very sturdy and very small. And they had a female experimenter stand at the end of both bridges and ask men to fill out a survey. This was in the 70s, so it's kind of a sexist study. But they would ask men, hey, could you fill out the survey? If you have any questions, I'm going to give you my phone number and feel free to give me a call. And what the researchers found was, I think it was twice as many men from the rickety bridge called her than the men from the sturdy bridge. And they said, well, why? You know, why did you call the woman? And the men said, oh, I called her because she was or she was nice, or, you know, they sort of felt like they had these really clear reasons. But the actual reason was that their autonomic nervous system and their body was aroused, and they sort of misattributed that to the person standing at the end of the bridge. And the reason I love that study in the context of self-awareness is we might be 100% sure why, you know, here's why I did this, or here's why this is happening. But we don't know, there's really no way to know whether we're right or not. And that's not to say that we shouldn't dig for the why, but I think sometimes we just get overly reliant on what we think seems like the right answer.
Right. We sort of, yeah. Make evidence, even though the evidence isn't potentially factual or could be measured.
Yeah, exactly.
It really helped to close. Does it help to help close the introspection or the reflection that we're having, just to sort of put end to it, so we don't have to think about it anymore?
that's a fair question, given everything I just said. I found, again, in studying these self-aware people and just digging into the research, is that instead of going deep, we should be going wide as a general high-level principle. So an example might be, instead of saying, I'm not happy at my job, why am I not happy at my job? We might say, okay, let me think of the last three jobs I've had. What have been the patterns over time of things that I've been the most excited about? What have been the things that have been most frustrating or most draining for me? And so that way, instead of like excavating deep within that one situation and trying to find the hidden answer, we're looking for patterns across time. And what I love about that is, not only is it frankly a little bit easier, but it's helps us act based upon that. So if you say, gosh, you know, here's these three things that I don't want to have as part of my responsibilities in my next job, that's actionable. That's insight.
That's going to be beneficial. Cool. And I think you could also look not just into the job too. It might be, well, hey, where else am I not happy? You know, what else is you know, not satisfying me in my life, rather than just trying to attribute it to one aspect.
Right.
Hey, how like it? So actionable steps can come from the right kind of introspection. How do we find that right? I mean, again, that's a really valid point, going wide. Is there any other techniques there that to really help us, reflect and become more self-aware?
Mm-hmm. So another technique is to practice mindfulness. Uh-huh. And it's funny because people hear mindfulness and they think meditation. And as an extremely type A, you know, ball of energy, I have tried meditation. I know it works for a lot of other people. It's not for everyone. And one of the things that is fascinating to me is that it's not the only way of practicing mindfulness. So mindfulness is about you know, being aware of your present moment and comparing and contrasting it with other experiences in your life. And so that's just another example of comparing and contrasting. So if I'm really upset right now, or if I'm really happy right now, and I'm trying to figure out why am I so happy, I could say, what are those commonalities right. from past situations in my life where I have been happy? And it's interesting to think that looking into your past could be a method of mindfulness, but if you're using it to understand something that you're feeling now, it can be really informative. So that's one. Another, this is going to sound so simple, it's, you know, crazy, but it actually works very, very well. Oftentimes, especially when we're experiencing negative emotions, the act of naming that emotion and saying, I'm feeling blank, not only helps us. Yeah. And there's a lot of brain science behind this, where they actually scan of people who are experiencing negative emotions. And when they have, you know, they might say, why are you feeling this way? Which is not the right question. Or they might say, what are you feeling? What emotion are you feeling? And it sort of overrides what our brain is doing in those moments, and helps us calm down and get centered and get a little bit more control over how we're feeling. So that's another tool that, you know, people could start using right now. And I think if it seems too good to be true, I would say try it and prepare to be amazed.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And I mean, yeah, we all have those negative emotions, and I'm certainly guilty of a few types of them, predominantly. And it certainly helped me just by going, hey, how am I feeling right now? What is this emotion? And then I name it. And it certainly helps me, go back to assessing it with a bit more detail and openness.
Well, and I love that. And it's so funny, because sometimes we might realize that the way we're feeling is not quite as dire as what we think. So earlier today, I was just in a really bad mood. I was reading all these emails, and every one of them was stressing me out. And I sort of thought, this isn't, something about this isn't right. And I took a step back and I said, what am I feeling? And I said, oh, it's 2:00. I haven't eaten anything today. I'm really hungry. And you know, it's not usually that simple, but I think so many times we just let the emotions suck us in, and we start behaving and reacting, when even just taking a step back and saying, what am I feeling, or what do I need right now, can do a world of good.
Yeah, it's that pausing and not just continuing without that pause. I heard an interesting story in a book I read recently about Toyota in the factory. They created a system called Undone, I think it was termed. Whereby the process workers, if they ever experience trouble or delay, rather than trying to deal with the problem themselves and solve it, which caused, you know, more problems in the process line, they could press the button and send an alert out and get immediate help. And that would help improve the effectiveness of the overall organization. It took a while for the people to you know, go with it, because they didn't want to feel embarrassed or anything or affect their pride. But once they started, everyone started doing it and helped improve the results of the organization. And I just reflected on that, thought how important it is for us to, you know, when we feel a little bit of unease or dissatisfaction in our moment, how important is this just to pull that button and press pause and just, you know, assess the situation and ask why, and how that'll help us with our effectiveness in life, you know, moving forward as well.
That's so true. I think that's a great real world example of how companies can harness these principles to not just be more financially profitable, but to create a better place for their employees to work.
Very cool. Look, I think, we won't give away all the insights of your book, Insight. And I look forward to having a read too. I haven't had a read yet, so I can't wait to have a read. It's certainly aligned with what I love. I'm fascinated by it. Actually, I was in the pool the other day, an example that you might want to add to, but I just finished doing my laps. I got to the end and I looked up, and there was this lady standing there in her swimsuit, and she looked down at me and smiled and said something in Japanese, which I didn't quite understand at the time. But what I noticed immediately, she had quite hairy legs and hairy arms, and the Japanese, you know, have dark hair, so you could really notice it. And I was sort of a bit put off by it at first, and then I had to just sort of slap myself and go, hang on, what's going on here? And it was just an interesting sort of moment for me where I just paused and said, well, why? Why is that a condition that I'm, you know, that I'm put off by, and why does it matter? And once I started assessing the situation, I actually walked away really positive about the situation and the experience. And I think it's just another example of how you can pause when you feel something, you just question it. Why? Why does that exist? And is it necessary or beneficial for the direction of my life? There was some really profound sort of reflections that I had in that moment. So I don't know.
Well, and what I love about that is it was an everyday insight. It wasn't, a sort of earth-shattering event or occasion in your life. And that was what we found in our research, is people were twice as likely to get those types of insights in these almost like mundane everyday experiences as they were these really earth-shattering events that we typically associate with increased self-awareness. So there's hope for all of us, and there's hope for all of us every day.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah. You sort of start to be aware of those situations that normally you just look at, be put off or whatever, and then sort of move on about your busy day. And I think that's another part of the process. I think we're just sometimes all a little bit too busy, and it's not necessarily going to decrease your effectiveness. It's probably going to increase it by becoming more self-aware, which I assume is exactly some of the research you've found. Very cool. Let's jump into these final questions. Thank you for sharing your insight. And guys, I will stick a copy or a link to Tasha's book in the show notes, so you can check it out and pick up a copy. It'd be a great read by the sounds of it, so certainly check it out. Now, let's go into these other questions. So the first question I want to ask you, do you have any routines or rituals, Tasha, that you believe contribute to your success?
Well, I nobody's ever as successful as they want to be, so I will preface this by saying this is just my sort of meager offering. But for me, I've found two things. Number one, physical activity. I think I came up with every major idea from my book while I was on the treadmill, so that's something that I try to, even if I don't want to, I try to squeeze it in every day. And then the second is canine companionship. Particularly for people that have really full, busy lives, we just get so stressed and we get so wound up. And we have two dogs, and they're these tiny, tiny little poodles. And it's amazing how within 5 minutes of coming home from a stressful day, everything can feel different after you just spend some time hanging out with them in the backyard.
Yeah, wow, cool. I like it. Canine companionship. I just watched a really cool documentary about some Russians in a remote area of Russia. And they go away for, the winter season, a few months by themselves, and they're with their dog. And it's really insightful into that relationship and how great it is for their overall happiness too.
Yeah, that's great.
Even though they're quite isolated. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
This one was so easy. Calm down. you sort of think when you're 20, and I think I suffered from this because just having sort of unreasonable expectations of myself for my whole life and feeling like nothing was happening fast enough to just relax into life. And I think I'm a little better at that, in my late 30s, not as much as I would want to be, but I definitely think I have made some progress.
Right. Okay, cool. I like that. Good advice. What is your meaning of success?
This one I pondered for probably hours over the last couple of days, because I think it's so ephemeral almost to describe. But what I came down with were sort of three elements that have to be satisfied with an underlying element sort of under them. So performance, passion, and purpose. And what I mean by that is doing something you love well, that makes the world a better place. So those are the three. And then the underlying part, the practical part, is in a way that can pay your bills. And whatever your bills are, whatever lifestyle you want to have, I think if you can figure out a way to perform well, to do what you're passionate about, to have a sense of purpose and contribution to the world in some positive way, and you can have the lifestyle that you want to have, I think that's what success means to me.
Yeah, well said. I like that. Do you have a piece of productivity advice that you'd like to share?
Probably, this is probably not that profound, but for what it's worth, I think every day to try to do the most important thing first, mm-hmm. because our days get away from us. We fight corporate fire drills, so many people. And I think if you can just find, first of all, that time that you're productive and try to put that most important thing in that place, I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, I think that's really profound, actually. It's doing those things that are important first. Good advice. What advice would you give someone looking to make some change in their life?
I would say reach out and get support. Maybe try to find one person who can serve as a support when you're feeling down or overwhelmed, who can give you feedback on what they're seeing. Ideally, it's somebody that sees you every day. But I think so many times we try to fight these battles alone, or we feel alienated by other people or from other people when we're trying to make these changes. You know, I'd give an example of a leader who wants to become more effective. The worst thing that leader could do is do that behind a closed door. The best thing that leader could do is tell their team, you know, here's what I want to improve and here's what I want to ask of you for your help. We're, none of us are alone in this.
Yeah. Yeah. So get the support. And again, going back, you know, pull the cord, ask for help.
Yeah, exactly.
In that moment.
As hard as it is for me personally to do that, you know, a lot of this is aspirational. Like that's something that I think I need to work on, but it, every time I do it, I'm happy that I did.
And you become more comfortable doing it too. I think once you do it, the first time, I think it becomes a little easier. What is your favorite food?
I wish I would stop eating it. It's pad thai.
Pad thai. Yeah. Could be worse things. What's your favorite leisure activity?
Tie between traveling and theater.
Okay. And favorite book that you'd like to recommend?
Another tie. I clearly can't make decisions. So number one is The Great Gatsby by Fitzgerald. And the other is The Unbearable Lightness of Being by Milan Kundera. Probably one of the most beautiful books ever written.
Okay, cool. I'll stick those in the show notes, guys. So check that out at thehiddenwhy.com.
Awesome.
And I'll stick your book in there too. Do you have a favorite quote?
I do. I have a quote that I can pretty much trace to where I am right now and the moment that I first experienced it. It's by Goethe, and it's, "Whatever you do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it."
Cool. I like it. So that's by Goethe.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Wise words.
Yeah, I like it. Do we all have a why?
I don't know if it's ever singular. I think we all have many whys. Uh-huh. I think the challenge is on what they are, and that's the lifelong pursuit.
Okay, very cool. And what do you believe? You sort of answered this, I guess, but we'll ask it again. What do you believe living with passion and purpose really mean?
Maybe an outcome or a yardstick or barometer that I'd use is, at the end of the day, do I feel like what I did had meaning and made me happy in some way?
Mm. Yeah. And how can people find out about you, Tasha? Where can they go? How can they reach you?
Well, I'm everywhere. I'm hard to miss. But if your reader or if your listeners actually are intrigued about their own level of self-awareness, which I hope they are, I hope that's something that we're all asking ourselves, I put together a free quiz that they can get, where basically it's 14 questions, takes 5 minutes. You fill it out, you send it to someone who knows you well to get a read on your external self-awareness, and then it spits out a report. Kind of your quick and dirty self-awareness level and a couple of tips to improve it. And they can find that at www.insight-quiz.com. It's really fun and hopefully valuable.
Insight. Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds cool. Who do you send that to? Like you're not going to send it to your mum, or do you send it to your mum and maybe an ex-colleague or what?
I recommend, I call them loving critics. So someone who wants you to be successful and who is willing to tell you the truth. And again, this isn't, you can't assess someone's level of self-awareness in 14 questions, but it's a really excellent place to start. I've actually heard of people taking it multiple times and sending it to their spouse or their boss or their employee. And the beauty of it is you could theoretically take it as many times as you want. So I hope that's a resource that just gets people's journey started or helps them continue it.
It's kind of a bold activity. I did it once where I just did up my own questions and sent it out to a bunch of different people, from ex-colleagues to friends to, you know, people that I don't know anymore and people I do. And it was just interesting, the insight that I got back and the feedback that I got back.
Absolutely.
But you certainly get, you get the commonalities too, that come back and you go, wow, there you go.
And was it a positive experience for you overall?
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 And yeah. I think sometimes, people are interesting how they respond to that sort of stuff. But, I think sometimes they're a bit more positive than perhaps being as honest as they can. And some of the friends that I consider my, closest friends, they're the ones that are more honest than anyone else. They will sort of let you know perhaps the negatives as well. But overall, I think the feedback was more positive than negative, truthfully. So perhaps I didn't get a really good insight. But yeah, the experience for me was very positive at the end of it.
And even when we get, you know, whatever negative feedback is, but feedback that isn't what we expect or we don't like it for some reason, it puts us in control. It doesn't mean we have to do something about it in particular. It doesn't mean that we have to sort of drop everything for it. But knowing, I argue, is always, always better than not knowing. So I never want anyone to feel intimidated by that process. Yes, there are going to be moments where you're surprised, where you're not super thrilled, but the overall journey is, it's so worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, as you said, that it's a meta skill. It's going to affect positively all aspects of your life, and that can only be good for your overall life and the direction of it. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of questions I would have liked to ask you that I didn't get to, but we've covered a lot of grounds here, and I really appreciate you sharing all that you've shared today, Tasha, so thank you for that. And hopefully we can connect again sometime down the track. I look forward to reading your book. Again, guys, for you listening out there, make sure you jump onto thehiddenwhy.com. I'll stick the book link in the show notes there so you can pick up a copy for yourself, and certainly reach out to Tasha, take her up on that inside quiz. I'll put the link to that in the show as well. And again, Tasha, thank you for coming on the show.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There you go, guys. Jump onto thehiddenwhy.com. Check it all out there. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. Guys, I hope you've enjoyed today's show. Please reach out to me if you have any questions, thoughts, or feedback for the show as well. I would love to hear from you. Guys, this show is sponsored by MotionWrapped.com. If you have a brand, a business, product, event, or creative independent work that you want to promote, but you have a tight budget to do it, then MotionWrapped.com might be your solution. MotionWrapped specializes in video and motion graphics, graphic design, social marketing for independent creatives and entrepreneurs. They can cover all your product or brand's foundational needs, whether it be a logo design, a complete brand identity, the promotion of a product or event, images and videos for social media, or promotional assets via print and video. And best of all, they strategically tailor the development process to suit your budget and to suit your needs. Just because something is cheap and simple doesn't mean it still can't have great effect. And that's certainly the work that MotionWrapped does. If you'd like more information on developing an effective promotional marketing strategy for your startup or independent creative work, visit www.motionwrapped.com and discuss what can be done. That's www.motionwrapped.com. We are also sponsored by Global Office Assistance, a great outsourcing solution. So if you're, again, an entrepreneur, a creative, independent, looking to free up some of your time and outsource or delegate out a lot of those admin tasks, those systems and processes you have in place that just chew up a lot of your time that you don't necessarily need to be doing, virtual assistants are a great way to do that. I've just written a book about this as well, called Delegate to Freedom. So if you're interested, I'm happy to send you a copy for free. Just email me at thehiddenwhyguy@gmail.com. But more importantly, if you're interested or have thought about hiring someone to help you in your business, virtual assistants are a very affordable way to do that. Our team is based in the Philippines, so you can get a great assistant for a very affordable price, and their work quality is just as good as anyone else that you could otherwise hire. So check it out, globaloffice.com. That's globaloffice.com. You can set up a time to consult with them and they can discuss your needs further and see if it's a fit for you. Guys, that's it from me here at The Hidden Why. I hope you enjoy your day. I hope you enjoy your week. And until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. We'll see you soon.